Well, good morning. Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday and welcome to the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces, episode 134. I am your host, Coleman, and I do want to thank everybody who's tuning in this morning. I do truly wish you all had a fantastic weekend. And let's go ahead and just kind of start rolling right into it. I want to welcome our panel speakers, Mike, Bob, and Texas Toast. If anyone would like to come join us this morning and talk about their weekend or anything that they're excited about, please feel free to go ahead and hit that request button. We'll bring you up here on stage. Only two rules: be courteous of others and no shitcoining. And if you're a little stage frightened, you can go ahead and use that chat box down in the bottom right-hand corner. But good morning, gentlemen. I hope you had a fantastic weekend.
Morning, Coleman. Good morning, everybody.
Morning, fellas.
Morning.
All right, so let's show of hands. Who was actually tricked by that fake AI-generated White House video where they showed the white paper? Did any of our listeners believe that was really true, or did we all see
it? I didn't even know that that was a thing.
I had already seen the J.D. Vance one, so knew it was fake.
The video looks so real.
Yeah, I took the entire weekend off social media, no TV, nothing. It was absolutely amazing. So when I came in this morning looking for topics, I saw it, and the video they show, it looks pretty bad. So I think we need to have some more internal fighting going on. We need some new projects to work on or something, because we are just getting too caught up in the nonsense that's going on. It's not making us look very intelligent when we're falling for crap like that.
Yeah, Coleman, I think
I fell for it.
I think the initially it's easy to fall for it because a lot of times we're only halfway paying attention. I think a lot of people are multitasking, doing a lot of different things and just trying to, you know, glean some information off of social media. And so I think this is just a great example of where we need to be more diligent in looking at sources and making sure the things that come across don't make us make stupid decisions, especially for those of us who are newer to the space and react to news and different things where it could maybe impact your confidence in the asset you're holding. So I don't know. I think it's a good reminder for us to make sure that on things that are seemingly like gigantic news, to really be vigilant on finding out if the source is true or if it's a deep fake like this. I'll be honest. Like when I first looked at it, I watched it twice because I was like, this looks really weird. I don't think that this is true. But where I could see where it could get some people, especially if you're only halfway paying attention, is, you know, the voice layover of Donald Trump wasn't AI generated. It was just a recording of something else. And so I could see where if you're really, just not really paying attention close enough, where you'd be like, oh, wow, that is Trump's voice. It doesn't sound, you know, AI generated or anything like that. Obviously, it was pertaining to some other things that he had said in the past. But those are my comments on it. Curious to hear other people's thoughts.
I just told my wife, hey, they put the white paper in the White House. That's it. But I just took it as, oh, they did it because, I mean, we got a strategic Bitcoin reserve. What's the big deal about the white paper? It should be in there.
Yeah, and unfortunately, like adding to what Bob said, checking sources isn't necessarily as important or valuable in like bear market situations. But like when we're looking at the situation for Bitcoin right now, which is, I mean, there's a lot of chaos and fear in markets in general, but like aside from what's going on with legacy, everything else is pointing towards a bull market in Bitcoin. So like there's obviously the potential for legacy markets and macro developments to kind of like suck the wind out of the sails and everything. But right now, like it's kind of like I would describe this as kind of like the calm before the storm. As far as like the Bitcoin bull market goes, like the spring is continuing to just wind up. And this is where the searching for sources is going to be particularly important, because a lot of times these kinds of initiatives are trying to spark really, really aggressive FOMO and really rapid price action to try and manipulate the price to break through like sell walls and, get the market makers to move and trigger the bots to really start liquidating leverage longs in either direction. So it's just really important to just like right now to really just kind of pay attention and dig in and try and figure out whether it's true or not, which unfortunately we're in a world and an environment where that's going to continue to get more and more difficult. So that's a time intensive and energy intensive task for all of us.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mike. I think we're all just looking for an excuse, just something that's just going to light this kindling that we have and ignite the Bitcoin price. So we're just anything that looks like it could just kind of launch as we're looking for. You can use the IMF paper as well. You got Matt Kaiser out there tweeting that the IMF is claiming that Bitcoin's digital gold. Nowhere in that paper does it say it. So we're all just trying to get this thing moving. When it, again, Bitcoin's its own beast. It's going to do its own thing. When it's ready to move, it's ready to move. And 99 out of 100 times, all of us are going to be caught off guard. So just stay humble, stack sats, and that's the best thing you can do.
Yeah, if you guys are enjoying the space so far, we're about 10 minutes in. We got 51 people in here. Thanks for being here. Please use that chat box in the bottom right. And if you want to come up and speak, as Coleman said, feel free to come up. Retweet the space so that others that follow you can hear some of this information. But again, want to thank everybody for being here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you all for tuning in. Before we go to the stablecoin bill, Bob, I want to go ahead and touch on this for a little bit. In case y'all didn't know, one of our partners is Solo Satoshi. Full warning, we promote them quite a bit. If you do go ahead and take advantage of our discount codes and purchase one, I'm telling you, it's a very addictive hobby you're getting into. You constantly want to get another one and continue to add, and it kind of, it's very addicting, I find it anyways. And with that news, a Solo miner found block 888,989 over the weekend. They found this block with under 1 terahash of energy or hash rate. So just to put that in perspective, for those of you who may not know, I had to write this down. Okay, so 1 megahash is 1 million hash rates. 1 gigahash is 1 billion. 1 terahash is 1 trillion hash rates per second. So this Solo miner found that with underneath that 1 terahash hash rate. Just so everyone is aware, the current Bitcoin network hash rate, according to public pool data, is 1 zettahash. 1 sextillion hashes per second. So you, after a terahash, you have quadrillion hash, quintillion hash, and then zeta hash, 21 zeros. So it's pretty secure, but I think it's absolutely amazing that a Solo miner was able to win that block. They got over just a little bit over $250,000. So when we mention Solo Satoshi, again, I say this wholeheartedly, go ahead and do it. It takes up very little space. It's very quiet. You can plug it in anywheres, but you're getting a chance to win that Bitcoin pool, and it's kind of like the Bitcoin lottery. Just again, it's very addicting. I find myself always wanted to add another one somewhere or start adding them together. But I thought that was pretty cool news.
Yeah, it's a great conversation piece too. If you have people over and you have it out.
I keep waiting for the freaking Nerd Axe to be in stock, but you guys keep buying it up before I can get in there. Like, it's freaking ridiculous.
Yeah, I have 3 different email accounts, all with notifications, so I can at least get notified with a little bit of a chance of purchasing one. We have to get Matt to kind of give us an insider deal on this if we keep pushing his products.
Right? Like, how do we not have a back channel to be able to get our hands on this?
Well, that says a lot about his company, right? He treats everybody the same, and that's how he should. He shouldn't have favorites. And I find that very respectable. It's really easy, especially with when you have a small business, to go ahead and try and pick and choose your favorite customers. But it's best practice just to have, you know, just treat everybody the same. So I have more respect for him with that.
Hey guys, I got one of those, bit axes, or I don't know. But where you're pointing it to a pool and you get like Satoshis from it.
You broke up on me, Bitcoin. Did you have a question about pointing your hash rate to a certain pool and just getting a payout?
Yes, that's what I, am I clear now? Sorry, I'm walking the dog.
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear now, sir.
I was wondering, do you guys point your hash to a pool to get like minimal?
Heck no, bro. We solo mine. Lottery ticket. It's a lottery ticket. You're never going to make the sats back. I mean, unless you have like hook up everything in your house with some sort of Bitcoin mining capability, it's like you'd rather just have the solo mine, I think. Yeah, you just point it to public pool and it'll just, you attach a wallet address, and if it hits, your wallet will be populated with Bitcoin.
We had somebody on here a couple weeks ago that was talking about pointing their BitAx towards, I think they were pointing it towards Ocean. And he said that they were only getting about like 2 or 3 sats a day from doing it. So I guess like if you have a really long-term time preference and you're looking for dollar sat parity, then yeah, it'll start paying off. But I would just, like Texas said, I'm just going to take the chance. If I never win anything, I never win anything. But I just, if I win it, I want to keep all of it. I want to be greedy in that.
Yeah, I have a long time preference. So I was thinking of buying another one and pointing one to the, you know, a mining pool and then keeping the other as a lottery ticket just to see which one is better idea.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I mean.
Go ahead, Texas.
Sorry. No, because I've got one in my, I've got the BitAx in my office. And then I've got a, you know, like an S19 in my garage working off the excess energy from solar panels. And, that's the way you should do it if you want some like steady stream of sats. There's no, I wouldn't use bid axes to have any sort of steady stream of Satoshis. So just me.
And if you're someone who has a career that involves a lot of travel by vehicle, you can be a particular kind of psychopath like one of our co-founders, Jordan, who has a bid axe hooked up in the middle of his truck.
He just hooks it up to his hotspot on his phone, or how does he do that?
Well, when we, so he had it fired up while we were in North Carolina doing the Hurricane Helene stuff. And, he was obviously charging off his truck, but then he was bouncing it through the mobile Starlink that we had set up. But he's also got one of the trucks where you can get like cell signal to the truck itself. So that would probably be how you do it.
Yeah, that makes more sense. Well, there you go. Yeah, there's a ton of ways to do it. Again, I think it's just very addicting because you get one and then you start thinking of different scenarios and you're like, okay, maybe I'll have this one for just a public pool sharing. And then this one is just doing it myself. So yeah, just buyer beware. You're probably going to buy more than one if you purchase one. Hey, Bob, do you want to go ahead and start rolling into that the stablecoin bill that just made it through committee?
Yeah, sure. So for those of you who didn't hear, the Senate Banking Committee approved the GENIUS Act, which, you know, Coleman always starts out the space by saying, hey, this is a Bitcoin-only space. But I think that this, especially stablecoins, is something we really need to pay attention to. They're, you know, essentially it's, you could look at it. I've made the case in the past that this is the CBDC we all don't want. And this is just something that is going to be done in the private markets, but the government is de facto in control, right? So we'll see essentially through this bill, if it gets passed in the Senate, and then it'll have to go to the House, but they're really just laying the lines of how this is all going to work. And for those of you who don't know, stablecoins, you know, are certainly nothing to put your money into, unless you're looking to do like a quick cross-border payment or something like that. You really stand to gain nothing out of it. But these are still going to be used. And I think it's interesting that alongside this, there is really a lot of, like, you're seeing like clear lines drawn, like for regulation, like I talked about, but also you're seeing like where the US government can box out large issuers or not. So I think what's going to be really interesting, the news came out this week that Tether is now, which is a stablecoin, USDT, is now the seventh largest purchaser of US treasuries. And so they're buying these treasuries to back the Tether that they are issuing. And then they can get income off of it. And they're using that income to buy Bitcoin, but also invest in the space and promote their stablecoin across the world. So with Tether being so large, the regulators and this bill are probably going to be changed a little bit, I would guess, because you have this situation where the US government wants Tether to continue buying treasuries so we can fund our government. But at the same time, they want to put rules and regulations or laws around this to make it safe for people to use. And so they don't want the laws to be too heavy handed for Tether, but at the same time, they want Tether to abide by some of the rules. So I think this will be an interesting, the way this plays out will be interesting. I'm wondering in the back channels, like how much Tether and other stablecoin issuers are trying to get certain things in or out of this bill for when it's final. But yeah, this really is something we should be paying attention to, because I think it impacts, I work a lot with banks, and I know that it's going to impact the banks tremendously. Because right now they're really, you know, in control of the financial system still, and having these stable coins, if these banks don't start issuing stable coins or somehow trying to figure out how to monetize stable coins, this will be fast and furious, like the new financial system, because the rails are so much faster. It's a lot more transparent and easy to see. And the bank's ability to create money, because they need deposits to create money, it will be diminished much more quickly than, you know, any other threat, I think. And so I think this is really interesting to play. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Like, are the banks going to be lobbying on one side, and Tether and others are going to be lobbying on the other? And like, who wins out in this? You know, I think we've heard from the Trump administration that they want to usher this new stuff in. So it'll certainly be interesting to see how it plays out.
I'm growing more and more confident that Tether is going to be used as the international US dollar stablecoin, and then we're probably going to have something internal within the US. I could even see the US like developing a mechanism for they'll probably start with like a handful or even just one like certified issuer of the internal US dollar stablecoin, and then they'll probably have the structure for or the infrastructure in place to bring on other banks as they agree to their terms.
It's Circle, correct? That the one of the three-letter agencies has kind of a non-spoken agreement with, where they can go ahead and track payments and kind of dox people? Or is that Tether?
I think it's both. We've seen sanctioned addresses from Tether. Like, Tether, I think, has been pretty fast to comply, and they've even set up internal mechanisms to help with exactly what you're talking about. But Circle is certainly there and obviously wants to gain from this. I also think you have that new RLUSD, which Ripple Labs, as a lot of people know, had given a lot of a lot to the campaign for Trump. And so I think, you know, their fast pivot to, you know, away from XRP, as I see it, to this new stablecoin, RLUSD, really should tell people that XRP doesn't have a future, and they've pivoted to a a stablecoin, which they're going to have to comply. So I think there's plenty of others. I'll also mention there's a bank. I'm not sure if it's still in existence, but when I was working at a bank, there was a consortium of banks that had gotten together, and they had released something called USDF, as in Frank. And so that was supposed to be like the bank stablecoin. Not sure how much traction it's gotten.
They named it Frank?
No, as in, I'm saying, like, not USDS or USDF. I'm just trying to say F as in Frank. So if people want to type it in, it's
USDF. Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you were saying like German Franks or something. I was like, what?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It's Foxtrot here, Bob. Come
there
on,
there you
man.
Go.
Well, I think we need to address a little bit with the issue with Tether and the stablecoin bill, is because I believe the way it's written, or from my understanding, they want these stablecoin issuers to be headquartered in the United States. And that's the issue with Tether, is they just relocated to El Salvador. Correct me if I'm wrong with that, but I believe that's one of the issues that Tether is going to be facing if this gets passed. Correct?
Yeah, and I think the other big one for Tether, from what I've seen, is the reserves. So there's requirements for issuing stablecoins that would be used for payments. And one of them is public reserves disclosure. And so the issue there is, you know, Tether's been pretty public on how their business works. And in recent years, I'll say. And so there's more and more that's coming out, but I think that they would still hesitate to disclose everything that's in the bill. So again, that's where what I brought up earlier, I think, is important. This, you know, the committee resolution is one thing, but what actually ends up being the actual bill that gets passed is another thing. And so I just wonder, with the purchasing power for lobbyists that Tether has, especially with them being the biggest and being the most profitable company per employee in the world, what types of strings they would pull to try to get changes made to this initial bill that's been passed by the Senate Banking Committee.
I think you might get an opportunity for Tether to flex its muscles and just say, no, we're going to not give you all the information you want. And if that's going to be an issue, then you need to find someone else to buy your treasuries. And I think, because, like you said earlier, Bob, they are large enough, it might give the U.S. a little bit of pause and give them just kind of like an exemption rule so that they can continue to do what they do.
You wonder if there's other horse trading that would go on, right? So one of the things in the bill, if you look into it a little bit, is that they wouldn't, you know, the bill doesn't say anything in particular about whether or not a stablecoin issuer would get a master account at the Federal Reserve Bank. So that, I wonder if it's like, well, hey, if you're not going to, like, we still want you to participate, but we'll concede and let you, you know, participate in U.S. markets, but you're going to have to relocate here in order to get a Fed master account. And that would give a huge leg up to other issuers, or something, you know, of the like. So I think that there's still, some of this that, has to play out. And again, nothing like you guys need to be experts on, but should be paying attention to, because I think this is just the first of many, things that are going to come to pass that I think is going to make both the traditional financial system, but then, and therefore everybody start paying attention to this space, as these things, you know, these dominoes fall. And so there's plenty of them that you can see. And if you're not bullish on Bitcoin because of, you know, things like this, then, yeah, maybe you should have a private conversation with one of us. Go to bitcoinveterans.org and throw in your information. We'll help educate you.
Yeah, absolutely. But why would this, let's just go ahead and break this down for everybody. Why would this be extremely bullish for Bitcoin getting this Genius Act pushed through and becoming law? Like, let's dissect this and kind of give the reasons.
Yeah, I'll say a couple things and then let others maybe chime in. But I think the ecosystem is one of the big things to look at, right? So once you have a digital dollar that's easily tradable for Bitcoin, I think that's just an easy way for people to essentially off-ramp from the existing financial system or on-ramp into Bitcoin. So in times of trouble or in times of where people lack confidence in the traditional financial system, this would just be easier for people to move to this asset that we all know is decentralized and secure, that is Bitcoin. And so I think that's one. But then the other thing that may be interesting to people is, you know, Tether has been investing in building out ways to build stablecoins on top of Bitcoin. So, you know, some of these could be built on other blockchains. So I think in the short term, we may see other blockchains adopted, whoever wants to give a ton of money. And that stinks, right? Because we're not here for the shitcoins. But I think the big question is, you know, as this is like the inning one, I think, or inning two of stablecoins, where we're going to see a lot of competition amongst shitcoins to try to be the network of choice for these stablecoins. And don't get sucked in. We'll say that first and foremost. But eventually this all goes to Bitcoin. Eventually all stablecoins will run on the base layer of money on the decentralized network, which is Bitcoin. So I think like this is an interesting time if you really think about it. If you've been in this space for any length of time, it seems like, wow, we've come so far, but you hear it said over and over again, we're still so early. And I think that's so true because we have yet to see some of these things battle out, like who's going to win out. And I think in the end, what'll happen is, Bitcoin is what you're going to build everything on. Everything else is just an R&D project, a test space for Bitcoin. Mike, I'll let you go.
Thanks, Bob. Like, and one of the other things on top of what you just said, as far as like the financial systems being built off Bitcoin, because it is like the world's first actual economic constant. I wrote an article for Bitcoin Magazine and for my Substack like a couple years ago now at this point, and it was famously, at least famously for me, one of the most unpopular articles I've written, I think, because the Bitcoin community didn't like what I had to say. But one of the things about like these stable coins in the future is that, again, on top of what you just said, these stablecoin issuers are going to, they're going to be behooved to actually custody and continue to buy Bitcoin themselves, because Bitcoin is that first asset in the world that accumulating more and more of it doesn't have ramifications in the meat space, right? It doesn't have implications for the physical world, because like if you're gonna base a currency off of something like gold, like you have to have a lot of physical space to store it. You have to have a lot of physical security to protect it, and you have to have a lot of physical logistics and equipment in order to move it. And then also Bitcoin's nature operates as like a black hole for liquidity. So that allows for entities like the Federal Reserve, or for these banks, or these stablecoin or CBDC issuing entities, to be able to take something on like Bitcoin and then fluff up their balance sheet in order to justify creating more of these stable coins. Because that's the dynamic of the current fiat system, is that it's based off of debt, versus if you have something like Bitcoin, you don't need to base it off debt. You just need to base it off the value of your assets. You can continue to issue these coins without really being concerned about some sort of bank run.
Yeah, I think one of the other things that we have to kind of look at is there was talk of creating this strategic Bitcoin reserve. Is it kind of undermining the US dollar and its hegemony? And so creating this stablecoin act, does that just kind of further push this along? And does it just make the case that, you know what, the US dollar is really not what it used to be, and there is a new change going on? So I do think it's worth watching to see how it progresses. There's definitely going to be some tweaks made along the way, but the final bill will be, I think, really telling as to the way that the dollar's role may be played in the coming future. That's my thought on it.
Yeah, and if you don't think that these, especially large banking institutions, are going to have somewhat of a say on this, they certainly will. You know, they've been some of the largest donors to politicians in this country over many, many decades. I've seen firsthand helping create bills for states, doing consulting work, and seeing how the banking lobby will shut those things down very quickly with, very friendly congressmen. So all I'll say is I think there's a lot more that has to play out with this bill, but I'm here eating popcorn and watching, right? Like, I think that it'll be interesting, and nothing, like I said, anybody needs to be experts on, but it's something to definitely pay attention to, because it does, you know, if you really zoom out, guys, what you really have to look at is this is just one piece of a huge puzzle and a domino to fall for inevitably going more and more digital to digital currency. And with the guidelines, the guardrails for things like this, it's all going to just slowly move towards Bitcoin. That's where we're going. So I think maybe nothing to really, you know, hang your hat on or anything. I don't know that it in the short term really does much, you know, for Bitcoin. But I think if you really zoom out, like, this is just one piece, and it's exciting to see.
Absolutely. Really quick, I do want to say a thank you to our partners. Punchplate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. Go to punchplate.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training. PaladinTowerTactics.com. Scott Wiley will be putting on a course at the Bitcoin Alaska Conference on July 2nd. This will be held in Juneau. Get your tickets to Bitcoin Alaska at BitcoinAlaska.org. And if you'd like to go ahead and sign up for Scott's course at Bitcoin Alaska, reach out and send an email to the Bitcoin Alaska email address there, and they will get you set up and registered. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Use our code BTCVETS for 5% off your order. Pay with Bitcoin, get an additional 10% off, so potential for 15% off your order. Solosatoshi.com. And Fountain App. get paid, pay your favorite podcasters, your favorite musicians, or just get paid for leaving comments, go to fountain.fm and give them a listen. And secure your Bitcoin like it is worth 10 times what it is today. Get yourself a Cold Card MK4 or a Cold Card Q. These are the most secure hardware wallets out there. I will debate anybody on this. I really like what NVK is doing there at CoinKite. Use our link up in the nest. If we can get a couple more people using that link, we'll be able to offer a unique discount coin or discount code for all of our listeners. Go give them a check at our link in the nest. Gentlemen, did you have anything else you wanted to talk about with this, the Genius Act, the stablecoin bill, or do you want to go ahead and move on to something else?
Yeah, I guess I'll transition for us, Coleman, if that's okay. As I just kind of stated, you know, zooming out here, another domino to fall here is the SEC issued a statement on proof of work mining activities. And so, you know, whether you've mined before or you're thinking of mining, this is kind of a declaration of what happened is they're saying that it doesn't meet the requirements that a securities issuer would. And so it really just kind of lays out, I think it's a nothing burger because people have been mining for a long time. There really haven't been lawsuits. But it really does give this clear understanding that the SEC isn't looking at Bitcoin miners or proof of work miners as securities offerings or having to comply with any type of SEC regulations. And so again, another domino to fall. What you're seeing is deregulation, and Trump has promised this, these types of things. And so there'll be many more to come. And I think it opens this space up wide for continued adoption, including Bitcoin. And you'll see Bitcoin, like Bitcoin dominance is extremely high. And I think a lot of people this cycle are looking for history to repeat with a quote unquote alt season. I'm not sure that it's going to happen. I think this cycle will be remembered as where you see a clear delineation between Bitcoin and its decentralization versus all these centralized projects. And so you have a clear choice to make. Are you going to be adopting stable coins, which I don't know why you'd do that, on these crypto projects? Or are you going to be understanding proof of work and the difference between Bitcoin and everything else? And I think a lot of people are going to get very frustrated with the lack of an alt season. So I'll just pause there if anybody else has any comments on that.
I'm hesitant to say there won't be an alt season just because of my experiences since I got in at 2017. But I also do like give a lot of credit to that Bob, because like we're in a, it's very interesting to watch, because like basically what you just described is like this power vacuum that's going on within the Bitcoin and crypto space, and the power vacuum, I think, in my opinion, is being charged by the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve, and then a lot of like the positive kind of signaling from mining operations and like the DOD, like we talked about, I believe it was last week. And then just other dynamics like that of just like a lot of Bitcoin related and Bitcoin tangent things becoming very positive. And then a lot of like the crypto stuff that you see these communities talking about on Twitter, like, oh, don't wait, don't worry. Like we're gonna get it, guys. We're gonna get this one thing. It's like, and then it all falls short. It's kind of, it's very interesting. I would be very happy to see a lack of an alt season, and it just like the tears of the crypto space would really, really recharge my batteries. I don't know about you guys.
I think you're both right. I think it might be a hybrid. I think you're going to see kind of a short like alt season where it's going to go back up again, but I think it's going to stop a lot sooner than when Bitcoin tops out. And I think you're going to see Bitcoin just keep pushing and pushing, and these altcoins are just going to get absolutely left behind. And I think the reason for that two stage or that two, those two phases will just be global adoption of Bitcoin, where you start seeing other nations come out and actively stating, hey, we're acquiring Bitcoin with a significant amount. And I think that's where you're going to start seeing a lot of people be like, well, I thought, you know, XRP was going to be the global financial rails. Why isn't Russia and China or Saudi Arabia, the Middle East acquiring this in quantity? Why is it only Bitcoin? And I think you might start to see people's eyes kind of open up and they might start believing that Bitcoin is by itself and everything else is just absolute trash. So I think they're both going to go up, but I think Bitcoin's going to continue to rise into next year, where these altcoins, I think by the fall or winter, they're going to start on a really hard downward crash. And you're just going to see Bitcoin keep rising.
Yeah, knowing that a lot of these projects are centralized, I could see where there's VCs pumping, you know, hype into the market. There's a lot of bag holders on some of this stuff from last cycle or the previous cycle. So you could see where the narrative will shift as the stablecoin bill comes out. There'll be some of these projects that will say, hey, our network's being used. But, you know, I still have to question like people's understanding of how things work. It may be a flash in the pan, but like, do you want to really be investing in the, maybe, you know, you could come up with a lot of maybe analogies, but do you want to be investing in the telephone lines, or do you want to be investing in the railroads, or do you want to be investing in the wire system for the banking system or ACH system? Like, do you want to own that system or that network or the token that supposedly represents that network? Or do you want something that is outside of that system completely, that is not controlled and is decentralized? And so I think that's why, you know, I'm coming at it from the angle I'm coming at it from, saying like, hey, the US has declared that they're going to have a, you know, a Bitcoin strategic reserve. Nothing else is in that. And really they're shifting everybody towards stablecoins because that is a way for them to have market participants buy US treasuries or buy US debt. So I don't really see if it matters. Like, I don't think it matters if you really think about it, what rails they use. And so somehow people, like to your point, Coleman and Mike, I think, oh, Mike's still up on a stage. I thought maybe we lost somebody, but to your points, like, people could get buffaloed into that for a while, like as these narratives come out about stablecoins and the rails. But I don't think that it's going to be lasting. And I don't think this time, because this is not a retail driven market to this point, that you'll see the FOMO creep in, and where these things continually pump for sustained amounts of time. I think the big money has spoken, and that will be all going into Bitcoin, not as much on these stable coins, especially for the long term.
Well, and the other thing I wanted to add to the Coleman, you had said something about the crypto space and this power vacuum we've been talking about. I think one of the big triggers for what would be like the signaling, the major signal for the death of the crypto space, or like the lack of an alt season this go around, would be the now finally accepted death of Ethereum. Like, I don't think any of us have seen quite what's going on with the Ethereum community and the Ethereum network right now. Like, we've, like, the developers and it seems like major influencers in the crypto space have finally admitted and accepted that Ethereum is literally flailing on the boat of the ship. And I think that the smarter of those in the crypto space, which I'm sorry, but I don't think people in the crypto space are smart. The smarter of the crypto space, they're going to be looking at that that conclusion, and then they're going to be going, okay, well, if this happened to Ethereum, and these other challengers like Solana basically spooled up out of Ethereum, then that would suggest that the next likely outcome is going to be that Solana follows suit. And then whatever spun up out of Solana to challenge their faults and their failures is also going to follow the same path. So it's just like, it's a daisy chain of rug pulls, and the crypto space is going to have to learn that one way or another.
Yeah, Mike, that's really good. I've been thinking about that too. I think that it's been interesting along the time that I've been in the space to hear people's rejection of Bitcoin, to say like, oh, well, you know, this is like another Betamax VHS, right? Or another MySpace, Facebook situation. Like, that's what's going to happen with Bitcoin. Something better is going to come along. And that better thing was always Ethereum. But what's interesting to find out here, and I think what we're seeing, is that Ethereum is the one that that you know, rejection should have come at, right? Because people don't understand the difference between a decentralized protocol and a centralized protocol. And what you're seeing with the shift for Ethereum from proof of work to proof of stake is that was the death blow. You've made it truly centralized, and now it's no longer the darling, because there have been incumbents that have come along and done it better, cheaper, faster. And I think, to your point, this will happen again. And really what you're seeing is these are all just rails, and their tokens have no value. And, you know, I'll be the first to admit, I could see them being used for stable coins as a competitor to Bitcoin, but eventually everybody comes to the fact that all this stuff gets built on Bitcoin, and these other projects were just test nets. And so we'll still see some competition, and we'll still see, you know, capital flows into these, but I think it'll be short-lived as people realize like they don't want to be controlled, and that the decentralized protocol is the one that has lasting value.
I think you both are absolutely correct. And if anybody needs a visualization of kind of how this is going to unfold, just go watch a film like City 5K Run, and you'll see what we mean. Everybody thinks that they can sprint the full 5K, so the first half mile is absolutely chaotic. And then after that, you see the clear runners emerge. They just continue with that pace, and everybody just stops and starts walking. So that's what you're going to see with this. You're going to see a bunch of people come out, and they look like they're all going to have a quote unquote chance, and then they just falter really early on. So that's what I think. I do want to mention for tomorrow's guest, we are going to have the creators and the hosts of the Mayan Bitcoin Conference in Yucatan, Mexico. That conference is December 4th and 7th of this year. You can go to mayanbitcoinconference.com to check them out, but they will be joining us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern time. So I just want to give everyone a heads up with that. So we're almost getting to the top of the hour. Do you guys want to finish off with one other news story? Mike or Bob, I'll throw it over to y'all to choose. If you don't have one, I have a couple topics we can go with.
Yeah, maybe we should just, you know, since we're doing the weekend recap, MicroStrategy has surpassed 500,000 Bitcoin with its recent purchase. And so maybe that's one thing to cover. If it doesn't fill all the time, yeah, we have a couple more topics that we can touch on. But my initial comments are on this are, you know, this is what Michael Saylor has said that he was going to do. I think bigger news would be if they ever said that they were selling Bitcoin. And so, you know, this is expected. And anybody who doesn't understand that MicroStrategy is going to continue to stack as much Bitcoin as fast as possible, as much as possible, hasn't been paying attention to the comments and the actions of Michael Saylor.
I agree. I think they need to slow down, though. I am really not a big fan with their new fundraiser of, what is it, Stark, where they're trying to raise $750 million, and they're going to be paying out a yearly dividend. I'm just not a big fan of that. It keeps them on the hook. If for some reason, you know, Bitcoin lags, it doesn't do anything, they'll be forced sellers of their Bitcoin. And they're just, or they're relying too much on their internal software business. And with this amount of money that's trying to be raised, it doesn't sit well with me. I understand he's trying to acquire as much as possible, as fast as possible. I just think this latest announcement was just, it's too risky for me. There's no reason for it. Just stay humble, stack sats. Everyone likes your convertible bonds. Keep selling the ATM. I think he had it increased to be able to sell just a ridiculous amount of shares. So just keep doing it slow. I think he wants to get to 1 million Bitcoin, correct? He wants 5%. Correct me if I'm wrong with that. Yeah.
And one thing though, Coleman, I will just for the listener, just correct you on. So the strike was one, and now the one I think you're describing is called, strife, perpetual strife, preferred stock. And I think that I agree with you. On one hand, I agree with you, that maybe this is, maybe this looks risky, but one of the things that I was on the shareholder call back at the end of October, and one thing that I really liked, and I'll remind everybody of here 5-6 months later, is that they committed to keeping their debt ratio to 25% of their balance sheet. And so why I think that's important is because I really do think MicroStrategy and Michael Saylor understand the gravity of this debt that they're taking on. And they want to make sure that, you know, because Bitcoin has been awfully volatile, that as investors look at these offerings, they understand that the risk is lower than maybe you and me would be taking on. And, you know, they're looking to preserve capital that is lasting capital that is forever, which is Bitcoin. So I think, you know, on the surface, it can look bad, but if you realize like they're keeping it within a boundary that's pretty safe, then maybe it's not as risky and doesn't look as terrible. If, you know, from first glance. So I'll just throw that out there.
While I hold the same position as Coleman, I don't like the Strife product, and I think it's particularly too risky and too kind of like Bitcoin degen to be doing. I will concede the point, Bob, that like I think what Michael Saylor and the rest of his team are probably also seeing is looking at the major, like, just macro situation with the U.S., all roads point to aggressive money printing. Even, like, in that, and I'm not saying, like, in the sense of, like, I am 100% sure that there's, like, any sort of recession coming, but looking at all the projects and the initiatives that are necessary for development within the U.S., especially, like, even if you're just looking at, say, energy projects and the chip manufacturers and nuclear, which is part of the energy products or projects, and then like looking at the kind of just all of the increases in war activity around the world, there's definitely a lot of money printing that is coming, at least in the medium to like far future. And there, I'm assuming that Michael Saylor is trying to get ahead of all of that, because I think we all know the meme that Bitcoin tracks the M2 money supply. And if they're going to be printing money, that M2 is going to be going up. And that means Bitcoin is going to be soaking up a lot of that excess liquidity that makes itself into the market.
Yeah. And I do think that this is testing the market, right? There's different instruments that he's offering for different pools of capital. And so I really do like, you know, on one hand, again, I agree with you guys that I think it looks risky, but on the other hand, if there's a market for it, and it's going to bring in new pools of capital, into Bitcoin, you know, through this proxy, then I kind of like it. And what it's also going to force these different pools of capital to do is pay more attention to the adoption and the trajectory of Bitcoin. And that is going to create potentially other buyers of Bitcoin that otherwise wouldn't be paying attention. So again, I don't mean to make it sound all rosy, but at the same time, like on the risk management side, I think they've done a good job. And so I'm not as concerned about it as maybe some others.
Really quick, I'm going to change topics. We had a listener question in, come through here. Anybody on the panel or in the crowd have an opinion of Bitcoin mining with a specific company? Example, a one-stop shop that'll sell you a rig, host, and pool for you. My initial reaction was just Solo Satoshi, just getting a little at-home miner and doing it like that. I don't know of any of the bigger companies that has like the newest models out there. I know it's not S19s anymore, it's something else. Do y'all know of any?
I'm not going to say that I know of any, but I'm going to, I apologize to whoever asked the question. I'm going to burst your bubble a little bit. If you're trying to get into anything that isn't something like the BitAx, if you're trying to get into like mining itself, if you're actually trying to make money, you're going to have to be an industrial player at this point. Like there's absolutely no way to be able to compete with like the Maras and the Clean Sparks and the Riots. It's just the calculus is just not there.
Mike, can I chime in here too? Like I totally wholeheartedly agree. And that was probably even the case back in 18 or 19. I mined back then, and I can tell you, like, I lost net of everything. Like I made money, right? If you're measuring your net worth in dollar terms, I made money. So you might be able to do that still, if you look in dollar terms, but net of just buying Bitcoin instead of investing that same capital into miners and electricity and a place to host them, I lost over 10 Bitcoin net of my mining proceeds. So at the time, didn't look so bad, a few thousand dollars. Now, do the math, right? Not looking so good. Could have had a lot more Bitcoin. And so I think that maybe when we talk about Solo Satoshi, we do need to be a little bit more careful about, like, this isn't an investment. It's a lottery miner, and not to speak, ill of lottery miners, but I do think we just need to like clarify that it's for the hobbyist. It's something to learn off of. Like you should learn, you should use this as a learning opportunity to understand how the Bitcoin network works. And, I couldn't, agree more that like it's a great product and it's something that you should probably take a look at. Like it's an inexpensive outlay, to learn a ton about Bitcoin. But, yeah, to Mike's point, like you're going to have a ton of capital in order to actually mine for a profit, especially if you're looking at it in Bitcoin terms.
But I will add onto that caveat as holy crap, we've got a lot of hobbyists piling in now. So like and to that question, if the individual that was asking that particular question, if they're not worried about trying to like make a profit or anything on their home mining activity, there's a couple of accounts in the audience now that I would definitely recommend following and if not hitting up for questions. TC would be one of the main ones. He's a guy that learned the lesson the hard way that we were just talking about as far as like the expense ratio is for individual personal mining. And then Montana.
What, Mike, my 900,000, that's not, you know, in current terms, that's not a hard lesson.
It's not a judgment against you, man. I'm just saying. But TC would be a major account to follow and like search his feed. And then Montani, I saw some of his stuff that he's been getting into some of the hobbyist things, like the stuff that's going on Bitcoin Twitter around the hobbyist mining and the things that they're doing with repurposing of heat and actually making it so they're reducing their costs for providing heat. So like say, for example, like laundry dryers or pools or hot tubs or whatever. If you're trying to get into that stuff, follow those accounts, hit them up for questions. They're much deeper into the individual mining operations and running and management than I am. And, Bob, it sounds like you're much farther along than I am as well. So like there's still a lot of stuff that you can benefit from. It's just that if you're asking questions as far as like getting into individual Bitcoin mining, like at home, you're going to waste money and you're going to be probably frustrated with the outcome. But if you are going to do the hobbyist stuff, don't focus on the newest and the latest. Get the older, cheaper miners to play around with. You might still get lucky as far as like finding a solo block, but, learning how to do the wiring properly and managing all the cost expenses and then like piping all the heat through, efficiently and repurposing it. That'd probably be like the stuff that you're really going to benefit from.
Hey, can I just chime in since you name dropped me like three times?
Yeah.
We wanted to make sure Mike said your name three times.
Okay. I'm not the poster child here. Okay. I lost one S19. I lost a machine. And also, you know, I feel pretty good about the fact that I persevered and I started the mining, the activity that I do. It's going to be 4 years in June. It was basically right in the aftermath of China mining ban back in 2021 is when I FOMO'd in because I saw the difficulty fall so fast that it was actually super easy to, you know, get a piece of the pie when you started hashing at that time. I'll never forget. I was getting like 100,000 sats a day off a very humble set of miners, very small amount of hash rate. It was pretty awesome. And then amazing how drastically and how quickly that income faded away as the hash rate returned, the difficulty went up. And this is an important thing about anyone even just entertaining the idea of getting into mining. It is the most competitive competition on planet Earth. You want to look at that mining hash rate chart. Right now we're somewhere around 800 exahash and, you know, whatever, you know, terahash, or if you're talking about bit axes, you're in gigahash. It's just such a small drop in the bucket as far as your competition for the next block. The thing people just don't really put together because it's totally unintuitive is you have to do all the profit calculations based in sats. You can't look at it based in dollars because exactly what Bob said, it's the opportunity cost of having just bought Bitcoin instead. And if I went back and just decided to actually listen to some of my friends, you know, almost 4 years ago and just buy Bitcoin instead of investing in some miners, I would have saved myself a lot of headaches. And I also would have missed out on sort of the education of it, but the point is that you can't, there's no shortcuts and you will see these hosting things. I engaged with Compass Mining when I first started, cause that was the only way that I could actually even mine. I live in California. My cost of energy is absurd. I think, I'm paying somewhere around 40 cents kilowatt. So the simple way to look at this, the simple way to look at this is, if you're not making a profit mining, if you're not actually spending fewer sats on the electricity setup and hardware, then the sats that you receive, you're essentially buying Bitcoin at a premium. So, you know, Bitcoin's 88K and you're paying 150K today for that Bitcoin or even higher. Like that is simply the way to look at it. You're acquiring Bitcoin for a cost. You're either acquiring it for a premium or a discount. The point of Bitcoin mining is to acquire Bitcoin at a discount. So you have to be brutally honest with yourself about how you know, you are incentivized. I think some of the people doing the solo mining, lottery mining thing, that's kind of a different incentive in a way. And there are some people, and I know I justified it myself thinking about getting KYC free sats as one of the motivations. And I tried to use that as a rationalization for why I was going to, you know, pursue it the way I was. But bottom line is you're either paying more for Bitcoin or less for Bitcoin than you would have if you just straight up buy it. So, you have to be brutally honest about that. And truthfully, if you're paying more than say 5 or 6 cents per kilowatt hour for your electricity, you're not profitable today. You know, Bitcoin goes to $1 million. Okay. You know, maybe you get a little more time at slightly higher energy costs. But the point is you're competing with people that are getting energy for 1 or 2 cents and in a lot of cases for free. And that's where it's all going. It's going towards, energy producers and nation states where even the likes of like Riot and Mara are going to really struggle to compete at a certain point.
And to add on to what TC just shared, part of the calculus is also going to be if there's ever any shocks in the natural gas market, that's going to cause a local cost of power to go up, which is going to negatively impact your returns.
Yeah, I don't want to give tax advice, and I see we got some other hands, so we'll get to you guys. But there are tax advantages to mining if you're doing it as a business. And so that would be, you know, another thing to put into the calculation. But I think we've only touched on, you know, some of it, and curious to hear what other people have to say. I think, Hunter, you might have been next. Go ahead.
Hey, did you call on me? I couldn't hear you. You're breaking up a little bit.
Yep, Hunter, go ahead. You're next.
Okay. Yeah, I'm glad TC touched on the non-KYC Bitcoin because I didn't hear anyone talk about that. And I don't know if that's an incentive enough to, you know, pay a premium for it, but that is something to consider. But I personally run two BitAxe home miners, and I bought them to help decentralize the hash rate. So I kind of donating my electricity and trying to decentralize some of the hash that's getting centralized by all these other countries and all these huge mining corporations. So I think if you're looking at the BitAxe, you might want to look at it from that point of view as well. You're most likely not going to hit it with a solo mine, but at least you'll be adding to decentralizing the hash rate.
I feel compelled to chime in there. You're decentralizing hash rate doesn't really mean as much as the bigger issue with centralization in mining is the centralization of template creation. So if you're solo mining and you're actually lottery ticket mining, you are decentralizing the template creation. If you're creating your own template, it just the hash rate itself is not the decentralizing force. You know, consider that all these giants of, you know, mining that are winning large percentages of the blocks every day, you know, they're sourcing their hash rate from all over the world. So where the hash rate is located doesn't necessarily matter as much as who's making the template. And that's the important nuance to kind of tweak your perspective there. A lot of people are mining to pools and they're not even, you know, in at all deciding what transactions are going into a block if they hit. And, so in essence, they're just, you know, lending their hash rate to a collective effort there. And the pool is the one picking the template. So it's an important distinction and people should start, really like digging into that if they're interested in the decentralization aspect of mining, because there's a lot of places you could mine, where you're not actually even doing that. So check that out.
Yeah, I'll definitely look into that. I had no idea about that in the template discussion. So I'm going to do my research on that. Thanks for the correction on that.
BTC adjudication, you're next.
Yeah, thanks for answering my question, guys. Good input from the crowd. I thought most of those points that were brought up by the previous two speakers. You know, the reason for my question was just to dig a little bit into the knowledge of the crowd and to validate some of my own feelings here. You know, I've been around for a while in the Bitcoin space and, you know, run my own node and all that stuff. It's more of a learning journey, tinker around, play around. I thought maybe I'd get my feet wet, you know, with some of the mining and, but those points, I couldn't see who was speaking for some reason on my app, on my phone right here. The normal icon of the speaker wasn't lit up on my phone, but those two previous speakers really hit on a lot of things, so I really appreciate their input. Yeah, I'm just going to continue what I'm doing. I like the idea of the loss opportunity. you know, and I'll just keep doing what I've been doing for the past 8 years and just staying quiet and just staying humble. Thank you, though.
Hey, you know, one other thing that's also really, I look back and something I completely wasn't thinking about at the time when I jumped into it with 2 feet is the cost of hardware, which swings drastically. And during the bull market is pretty much the worst time that you can like start doing Bitcoin mining. You have to think of it in terms of a business, and acquiring your hardware is a major capital expense that you're then trying to dig yourself out of that hole when you start getting some sats flowing in. During the bull market, the hardware is so much more expensive than during the bear market. And, you know, this is something again, where the people that knew what they were doing and had foresight and were investing capital and building out their business during the bear market are going to just run circles around you, because you're basically creating a tougher, you know, balance sheet hole to dig out of when you're acquiring that hardware at, you know, the top values. I mean, I look back, I paid some absolutely dumbfounding prices for S19s back in 2021. And, it's the main reason why it took me about 3 years just to break even when I thought I was going to break even in, you know, less than a year.
Sure. Yeah. No, exactly. Like the cost, I remember those days, you know, and I almost did it back then too, you know, 3-4 years ago, but, you know, the prices look cheaper now. And, but the loss of 2 years of getting back your initial investment, it seems to be a little too much. You know, I think it's probably around 2 years now. I'm actually sitting down in Brazil and, building out little solar panels here. So I was just thinking about what to do with the extra energy.
Yeah. That's a fabulous way to approach it. And I think that's where there's opportunity still for plebs, is that if you have the right perspective and now you're noticing opportunities that you would have just looked right past, you know, in the past before you were aware of this stuff, anywhere where there's cheap energy, and there are situations like this all over planet Earth, because there's just energy swirling around and transferring all over Earth. So whether it's solar or, you know, hydro or, you know, natural gas or whatever, you encounter a property somewhere or some situation where there's, you know, energy in excess or not being used, and it's, and hence the opportunity is not valued appropriately because people don't see the potential that you see, which is, oh, I just got to get some miners sucking up this energy. You know, that's where I think there's still opportunity, because I think there are situations out there where people can get extremely cheap energy if they just really go to you know, the places that other people, have assumed were not valuable. So it's arbitrage once again, but it's arbitraging the sourcing of the energy. Trying to do it off a grid is going to be increasingly unprofitable going forward.
You're absolutely right. And I got both of those resources down here. I do have a surplus of energy. So it's just, I see the physics in a lot of things now, and it's just, you know, getting bored. I'm in semi-retirement, you know, I've been doing the node stuff for a while, got a couple nodes set up, been in BTC for a while. I figured just, hey, play around a little bit, but the 2 years of lost opportunity there to get back your initial investment is a little bit too much for me. So I just probably just continue to do what I'm doing. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. And I don't want to go too far off topic. I know we're, you know, over our normal time, but it got me thinking with the tariffs talk, with the retaliation that we heard that could be coming from Canada in the northern states. I think it was New York, Michigan, and Minnesota are supplied power by Canada, and them just turning it off. I think realistically they wouldn't turn it off, right? They're producing all this power. They just need to find a new place to sell it if they're going to actually turn that off for the United States. And so you could see where maybe some miners, opportunistic miners, would come in and buy that energy at low cost while this is going on. But I don't think it's sustained enough. Like, I think the tariff threats and those things would get settled out too fast for miners to take advantage of that electricity that has no home. Mike, your hands up.
Oh no, my hand's not up, man. The space is just bugged out.
Hey, I got a drop. Thanks for letting me chime in, guys. And as always, thanks for your service. I always feel like I don't want to barge in on your guys' thing, but damn it, Mike, you mentioned my name three times.
I want you to barge in whenever you want, man.
Cheers, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks, TC. Hope to see you again. Well, with that, guys, I think that's a good place to end it. Hopefully everybody got a lot out of this episode. Fun to do a weekend recap and then dive into the mining stuff a little bit. Coleman had to get ready for a meeting, so he's listening in the background. But I do want to thank everybody who joined us today. Speakers, I know we didn't get to everybody that came up late, but I want to thank all the speakers, all the people who had it on in the background, listeners, people who are listening to it later. And by the way, follow everybody who's come up on the stage. They're good follows. And then also, whether you're a veteran or not, go to bitcoinveterans.org, fill out that connect form to get in touch with us. We'll answer questions about Bitcoin, get you plugged in to valuable resources for anything, any of the topics that you're interested in. Make sure you get good information on it. So that's all we have for today. And I want to wish you a great Monday and also remind you not to shitcoin. It's like eating toothpaste.
Dude, where do you come up with these?